Hello, welcome to the Basketball Soapbox, episode 42, as we look back at the first round here on Friday night's games and Saturday night's games in the NBA playoffs, the first round here. And we look ahead at the Celtics and Hawks, Knicks and Cavs, and finally Minnesota and Denver Nuggets. And we look ahead to Saturday's games, which start off at 1 p.m. on Saturday. But first, don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe, and share if you like what you're seeing and listening to on Spotify, YouTube, and various other platforms. But let's get into it. We have the Hawks defeat the Celtics there, 130-122, in a redemption game for Trae Young and the Atlanta Hawks, who had both pitiful game one and two performances, really turning it around here and keeping everything simple, attacking, consistently getting in the paint there. That was the difference for the Hawks there. Having seven players in double figures, Trae Young with 32, Javante Murray with 25, Sadiq Bey with 15, Bogdanovich with 15, Hunter with 11, and Johnson and Capella with 10 each, a pair there. And just to get that balance and stability, of course, role players play better at home, right? There's a little bit more comfortable there, being a little bit more comfortable at home versus the road. You're able to settle in, and the Hawks were able to do that all night and keep the Celtics off balance. It was competitive early, and the Hawks started to pull away there, and it just seemed like the Celtics defense just really couldn't stop the Hawks. The Hawks did a good job of attacking, switching into certain situations, especially with Trae Young switching with Al Horford and Javante Murray switching on Derek White and others, and really just keeping attacking, keeping a different consistency to their offense, and that's the thing that they leaned on when it seems like that kind of just floated in and out in the first two games. They showed why they were a top three offensive team in the league. This game here, scoring 130 points, having seven players in double figures shows that, to get that stability and balance throughout your team and roster scoring-wise, that was good. Another thing that helped the Hawks was points in the paint, 54-40, as I explained there, with Trae Young and Javante Murray specifically attacking the paint there. Sadiq Bey as well, and other guys just being able to finish at the rim and just attack the Celtics, spread them out, and be able to take advantage of those matchups. And especially the rebounding. This was the one thing that I said Atlanta had a chance to impact this series. I don't think they're going to win the series, but if they had any chance, it would be on the glass. And to get 48 rebounds to 29, that is significant ending possessions there, especially on the defensive end. But I believe they had five more offensive rebounds there on the offensive end. So you're getting that type of productivity and second chance points, second chance opportunities, stopping the Celtics from getting second chance opportunities. That was going to be an advantage. Limit the possessions of the Boston Celtics to better your chances there in this series. And they were able to take game three here tonight. And that was a big game from Trae Young, able to turn it around and really have a good playoff game that he's usually not having, especially efficiency-wise there. But to get that type of win for Atlanta, you got to feel good. Moving on to the Boston side of things, Boston really played well on the offensive end there. I think they had 15 threes in the first half. And if you look there, they had six in the second half. So you're sitting there going, why did they lose this game? But it's weird because Jason Tatum had 29 and 10, Jaylen Brown had 15, Marcus Smart had 24 and 8, 5 for 11 from 3, Malcolm Brogdon with 17 and 5, and even Grant Williams had a showing, having 14 points, who has been out of the rotation towards the end of the season, was able to chip in here with 14. And you're just wondering, how did the Celtics lose this game, right? I believe they gave up 70 points in the first half there. That's tough to overcome. You can't really do that. I don't care who you are. Even if you're one of the best defensive teams in the league, you can't do that. That's not going to help you. And even at times where I felt like the Celtics could have climbed back in and got it done, I believe they got it close to two in the fourth quarter and just couldn't get any closer there. The Hawks were able to continuously attack Al Horford late with Trae Young and Javante Murray, just attacking, scoring late. But it was just weird because the Boston Celtics led in assists 31-24. You lead that category, you're creating more opportunities, you think everything's going to go fine. Leading in steals, 11-5, so you're creating more turnovers for your team. And then they had more threes, 21-15. In the free throw battle, I think the Hawks only made two more free throws, but they were roughly around the same attempts there. So you're just like, how did the Celtics not pull this off? And how they didn't pull it off was, one, they didn't get on the glass. That was one of the things. If you're not going to rebound in this league, I don't care who you are, it's going to be tough to win, and the Celtics proved that. Despite leading in all those categories on the offensive end, you're not rebounding, you're not defending at a high level, teams will beat you. And that was that case tonight for the Boston Celtics. They got to figure it out. Well, not even figure it out. They just got to play with energy and a little bit more focus there on the defensive end, especially because their offense is there. We've seen that all season. We know the Celtics' offense there, especially with Brown and Tatum. When those guys get going, you know they're going to be a good offensive team. It's their defense that they need to rely on. Marcus Smart, Derek White, Al Horford, helping those switches on Al Horford a little bit more, things of that nature. And get game four, because you don't want to get trapped in Atlanta and end up going home with a 2-2 record going back home when you know you could have took business in Atlanta. You know you could have took business in Atlanta. And that leads me to my final point on this. Regardless, Celtics, no Magic City or King of Diamonds in Atlanta. Go straight to the hotel. Do not waste no time. You do not want to go back home 2-2 tied in the series against Atlanta. You want to finish this up and get it out the way. Seriously, no King of Diamonds, no Magic City or whatever clubs are down there in Atlanta. Don't do it. Just don't do it. Please don't do it. Do not do it. Finish up and you win the game. You win game four. Then maybe you can go to Magic City, King of Diamonds before you come back to Boston. Just saying. Take care of business. Get this out the way. Don't make this series longer than it needs to be. Moving on to our second game of the night, we have the New York Knicks. Oh, my goodness. Why did I do that? Let me just edit that right now. 1 second there. There we go. All right, in our second game of the night, we have the Knicks defeat the Cavs 99-79 in a slugfest, literally a slugfest. The Knicks held the Cleveland Cavaliers 32 points in the first half, really just being stifling defensively, really shutting things down to that point, and really just a throwback game to the 90s. They were missed threes. Everyone shot poorly. The free throws are terrible. Everybody shot poorly. It was just a slugfest. Bigs fighting for every inch. Guards fighting for every possession. Like, everything mattered in this game. And the Knicks were just able to cruise throughout this game. Jalen Brunson with 21-6, really powering them. RJ Barrett with a nice game with 19-8. Really just overpowering the Cleveland Cavaliers, who just – their guards just couldn't get off tonight. And just a lack of intensity from the Cleveland Cavaliers on their side. But Jalen Brunson, of course, and R.J. Barrett having a good offensive game. Julius Randle had 11, I believe. But let's get into the defense of Josh Hart and Emmanuel quickly. I did say that these guys can have an advantage there defensively with Quentin Grimes there. And I felt like that could have been an advantage to the Knicks heading into the series, especially with those two guys going at Garland, going at Donovan Mitchell. These guys are a little bit bigger than them, can wear them down, put their weight on them, switch, have a little bit better ability to switch there and really impact the game in that way. And they were able to do that, and they played intensely, both chipping in, scoring in double figures. I believe Josh Hart had 13, and Emmanuel quickly had 11. And in the game where you're thinking, hey, that's not a lot of points there. That's only 24 points between those two guys. How is that different from anything else? But the way they were playing defense overall as a team and really able to just short the possessions – for the Cleveland Cavaliers, it was tough for Cleveland on the night, and the Knicks just powered them in that Garden crowd and really paid dividends for them. Moving on to the Cleveland side of things, they really didn't – Donovan Mitchell had an okay game, but they really had a bad night from Garland and LeVert, 11 from 38 from the field, shooting 28%. And I said that when you're not giving Donovan Mitchell help on that offensive side of the ball, it can be really difficult to score, especially with Cleveland, who plays at a slow pace. And when their bigs aren't high-volume scorers, they're good around 15, 10 points a game right there, maybe a little bit more if they have a great night. But other than that, if those guys aren't scoring next to Donovan Mitchell, it's going to be a tough series. And especially when you're shooting 28% against the Knicks in the Garden, it's going to be a tough night. It's going to be a tough night for sure when you look at that. Like, it's really going to be tough. Like, I can't even think of a way that you can go into the Garden and not play well offensively and have a chance to win. Especially when your main guard, Donovan Mitchell, he's only having an okay game. When you're not spreading the floor, you're not creating those opportunities to score for yourself. and opening up the floor for him to be more dynamic, it's going to be tough for anybody to win in that garden. I'm telling you right now, it's going to be tough. Moving on to the main thing I think is a big factor in this game. The bench scoring of Cleveland is just not there, non-existent, and it was never addressed. The three-point shooting was never addressed. They tried to get Caris LeVert in the starting lineup and see if that was going to help. That was really their only card to play. Maybe Seti Osman can be in that position at some point. But when you really do that, you're looking at this like you lose the bench battle 14 to 39. That's 25 points. You lost by 20. That's not a real good recipe for success, especially on the road. And I know it's only game three, and I know that's I know it's only one game in the garden. Of course, game four is still there. But to play that poorly, they have to figure it out. And this has been an issue towards the end of the season. People were like, why did you get rid of Kevin Love and all these other things? And maybe he was just wearing his time out there. Maybe he was run down. Maybe he was washed. Whatever the case may be. They never addressed that situation for Cleveland. They addressed the guard play. They addressed the scoring. They needed a big guy that can get a playmaker. They did a little bit better than Atlanta in that situation, especially getting Donovan Mitchell, no question. But when you sit there and you look at the overall team, when you look at championship teams, when you look at contenders, not only do they have a good starting five, they also have a couple bench guys that can contribute. And guys like Seti Osman and Isaac Okoro and Ricky Rubio, those guys are nice, but you need a little bit more pop on that bench, especially right now. And again, I think Cleveland's 1 or 2 years away, but this is going to be a glaring issue. They're kind of like the Suns a little bit, not offensively, but just in terms of bench depth, right? Like their bench is a little bit better than Phoenix, but not enough to turn the tide, I think, in certain situations. And we saw tonight, when they're not available, when they're not hitting shots, when they're not helping their team, you lead to blowouts. It doesn't matter what the offensive does. Darius Garland and Caris LeVert can shoot like crap all day. But when you don't have a bench that's able to come in and being able to contribute, it's going to be tough to win for sure. It's going to be tough to win for the Cleveland Cavaliers, but the Knicks go up 2-1 in this series. Moving on to our final game of Friday night, we have the Denver Nuggets going up 3-0 against the Minnesota Timberwolves, 120 to 111. And this is a little bit more competitive game than the first one. The last two games for the Minnesota Timberwolves, I will say, those games have been a little bit more competitive from the sides, especially with Anthony Edwards. But Michael Porter Jr. getting 25 points and 9 rebounds. Joker with 20 points, 12 assists, and 11 rebounds. Another triple playoff triple-double for him. And as well as Jamal Murray adding 18 points and 9 assists. So you're getting those three guys, the big main three guys of Denver, playing that well offensively. They're going to be difficult to beat. Aaron Gordon was also nice in this game and has been solid throughout the series. But to get that type of production, I feel like that's something here that Michael Porter Jr. needed. He needed to be on the forefront and be a leader scorer because that's what he does, builds a little bit more confidence. And as I said, in these rounds, especially when I talk about these rounds where I feel like they're already determined, just a matter of time, I feel like a lot of teams can just use these games as a stepping stone, right? Like they can use this as a way to build their guys up, their other guys up. Because in later rounds, you're going to need these guys. You're going to need Michael Porter Jr. to be good. You're going to need Brown to be good. You're going to need Braun to be good. You're going to need all these other guys, KCP, to pick up their confidence to be good down the road. Because when Joker doesn't have it at night, when he's not having it on the offensive end, when Jamal Murray's struggling from the field, you're going to need other guys to step up. So to get that type of production from these guys here, throughout the roster of Denver is good. And I really feel like they're using this first round to just get their feet wet, right? Like, especially ending the season, the way they did, I think they were only one game above 500 heading into the playoffs. So to find that balance and get these guys a little bit more confident, a little bit mojo, the Timberwolves, of course, I don't think they're going to be in a chance to win this series. But to get a best shot from Minnesota, they are playing better, trying to figure it out. So to get that type of test right now in the first round, I feel like that's better for the Denver Nuggets, right? Like, that's what you want. You want to be tested, but you want to be able to put these teams away. And that's what they've been able to do so far, going up 3-0 in the series. And I just don't see an answer for Minnesota. Maybe they can steal a game here, but it's going to be difficult to win in Denver anyway, right? Like, I mean, in Minnesota anyway, right? Sorry. But in general, I don't know. let's get to the Minnesota side of things, right? Like Anthony Edwards having another big night. I believe he had 41 in game two, 36, 5, and 7 here in this game. Karl Anthony Towns chipped in with 27 and 7. And Rudy Gobert had 18 points, 10 rebounds, and 0 blocks. And the reason why I specify the, point out the 0 blocks from Rudy Gobert, it just speaks to the dynamic of the team when this team is getting spread out, when this team is getting pulled, when Rudy Gobert and Karl Anthony Towns have to chase all these pick and rolls, switch out, try to guard it. It's going to be difficult to do so. And I just feel like the fit of this team right here, right now, is just not working, right? Like, we all thought this trade – when the trade happened, I did say, hey, I understand why they did it. Improve their defensive rebound, improve their block shots, rim protection. You have an anchor down there. You have a three-time defensive player of the year, Rudy Gobert. But we've seen it not work in this type of situation, right? We've seen it not work. We've seen it not work because of just Rudy's capacity to score on the offensive end. It's not, he's not a high skilled big there. And you think the fit next to Towns, they'd be able to play a little bit more inside out, do a little bit more pick and rolls, pick and pops, certain things like that. But ultimately, their best player, Anthony Edwards, needs spacing. And that's kind of hard to do when Rudy Gobert can't create space. Teams can play zone. They can basically leave him uncovered if he tries to spread the floor or just staying out on the perimeter. But when he's inside, he's clogging the lane, and that's going to be difficult to try to maneuver that and try to navigate that night in, night out, especially in this guard league, especially in this wing league where guys are crafty with the ball, can switch out, score over you, take it to the basket, certain things like that. To continuously put Rudy Gobert and Karl Anthony Towns in those situations and not getting that defensive effort from Karl Anthony Towns on that end to do that and switch and hold up, they can put as many philosophies as they want in there. It's just not going to work, you know, and I feel like that's the thing that's really holding the Minnesota Timberwolves back, is that point where they have these two bigs that they're theoretically desperately need in terms of a scoring big like a Karl Anthony Towns who can spread the floor. Awesome. In terms of Rudy Gobert who can play defense and finish at the rim. Okay. Theoretically that works, but to them together right now, and especially on the defensive end, it's just not working, right? Despite all the great performances for Anthony Edwards, which we thought we were going to get, we're getting those type of performances where he's trying to lead this team, especially winning, and they just haven't been able to do it. And I feel like this is going to be a problem until they figure it out. And whether that's in the offseason or trading Karl Anthony Towns, they can explore that. I don't think they're going to get anything from Rudy Gobert, so they're pretty much stuck. But when you really look at it, it's just like, I just don't see this working for Minnesota long term in terms of this series and in terms of their roster rise. As for the Nuggets, Nuggets are going to continue to use this as a building block as they await one of the series there in Phoenix in L.A., the L.A. Clippers. So in case of Denver, you want to finish this right away. You want to get this done 4-0, move on to the next round, and just await. And hopefully the Clippers can extend this series at one point and see what it's doing, right? Like, that's the main thing. That's the main thing there for the Denver Nuggets. But Minnesota, I don't know what's going to happen. And don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe, as always. Let's move on to Saturday's games. First on the docket, we got the Sixers versus the Nets in Brooklyn. Game four, of course, 1 p.m. on ABC, I believe. Looking into this series, it has been highly competitive. Brooklyn has tried to give it a fight. They've been trying to do everything. They're scratching and crawling to try to just make it a series, right? And they lost by 5 the other night. They were close. They had their opportunities. Just couldn't get it done against this Philly team who's just more talented and just has that powerhouse of Joel Embiid. But now you got James Harden getting in the mix. You got James Maxey getting in the mix, even Tobias Harris to a certain degree. And it's going to be a tough climb. Now, can Brooklyn extend the series now with Joel Embiid with a right knee sprain? I believe he's going to miss game four. Yes. Yes. Brooklyn could extend it theoretically. But I feel like this is a big opportunity even for the Philadelphia 76ers. You know, Doc Rivers has been preaching the message. Hey, we got to be better. We got to do this. Kind of put their foot on the necks. Without Joel Embiid, it's going to be interesting to see how they play. Paul Reed is going to get a little bit more extensive time there, which I like for them. But when you look at it, it's like, hey, can James Harden really put a stamp down and be like, yo, we're going to the second round. We want to make sure we get some rest here. Whatever's happening with Boston and Atlanta, we want to make sure we're ready for that. Can James Harden lead that? He should do that. He should be able to beat Brooklyn Nets. Just going to say that. With Tyrese Maxey, he should be able to beat the Brooklyn Nets. Like, he should be able to figure out and navigate that until the big fella comes back for them. Moving on to one of the series that was supposed to be a banger if everyone was healthy. And that seems to be the consistency of the Los Angeles Clippers, right? Like, we didn't get Paul George, and we probably weren't going to get him in this series. Like, we knew that, right, heading in. So it's like, okay. And then we had the first game where the Clippers upset the Phoenix Suns, get a win, have them look discombobulated. I was like, all right, at least they got the split there. They had another chance there in game three and couldn't do it. And it was close. So you're just like, if these two guys, Paul George and Kawhi, were ever healthy, this would be able to make it a good series, right? Like, this would be probably one of the best series outside of Kings, Warriors, whatever. But ultimately, you think if those two guys are healthy, the Clippers have a real shot at not just beating the Suns, at winning a title. And unfortunately, we're probably never going to get the Battle of LA like we always wanted. In terms of Kawhi versus LeBron, Clippers versus the Lakers, it's looking more grim with this knee sprain or situation going on with Kawhi Leonard. So to get that type of air pulled out the bag, right? Like, this series has basically been like a bag of Doritos, right? Like, you like Doritos, you like the bag of Doritos, but then when you open it up and 75% air, it kind of sucks. And that's not to say that Phoenix isn't doing their thing. We got a good Chris Paul game the other night. Kevin Durant's having a great series, really finding his footing and getting his feet wet. But Devin Booker has been able to take advantage of all the attention that Kevin Durant is getting. He's able to attack his matchups and able to score, been able to score throughout this series. But, yeah, without Kawhi Leonard now, we already know Paul George is gone. So we're just left literally with this, right? Like, Russell Westbrook and the Clippeteers or something, whatever you want to call them. But Norman Powell had a big game, which was awesome. We saw Norman Powell able to go out there and really score up there, had 42 points, I believe. Eric Gordon, we're expecting a little bit more, but that's the only shot. Kind of similar how to the Clippers were in 2019 with Lou Williams and Dino Gallinari and that crew there that took two away from the Warriors in 2019. If we're able to get that type of performance, and Russell Westbrook has to play a little bit better, be a little bit more efficient, had a tough game one, of course, we all know that. But the ability for him to keep it going is going to be interesting, right? Like, that's the only way that they could have a shot to extend the series, try to get Kawhi a little bit more interested. If they tie it 2-2 and Kawhi can come back for game five, that's awesome. If Paul George can come back, they already ruled him out, but you know they're going to be trying to work there, trying to get him back. So it's going to be interesting to see how that works out. But for the Suns, people were complaining about the high minutes usage of Kevin Durant, Chris Paul. These guys are older. And I understand that where the concern is of these guys that have injury history. Chris Paul can go at any time with hamstrings, ankle sprains, something can tear with Chris Paul. We all know that his history has not been great health-wise in the playoffs in terms of not being injured. And we look at Kevin Durant, who has played the least amount of basketball as the years went on just because of these little injuries, these nagging little injuries there. So to see him play those high minutes, people are complaining about it. I'm like, if you can get this series done in five, right? You play those guys those minutes. And I don't think it's as much as a concern as people are trying to make. They really don't have an option on the bench there consistently to be like, hey, we can go to you and you can go get us some buckets. It's going to be tough to do that. It's going to be real tough to do that. But, yeah, I don't have any concerns about them roster-wise, right, or playing high minutes. Roster-wise, they just need a little bit of help on that bench, and maybe that will get addressed. Maybe they don't need to. But if they can get these series finished up fast, I like the Suns playing their players. But, yeah, I got the Suns winning that one there. And I need Kawhi, Leonard, and Paul George actually healthy and able to contribute. Moving on to an upside-down series where we don't know where anything is happening. The Miami Heat won a tough game one there against the Bucks. And now we have the Bucks coming back there in that series with a big time showing from multiple guys, getting all that production there from Drew Holiday, from a Bobby Portis, from a Drew Holiday, getting consistent balance throughout this team. Chris Middleton, of course, up there. Bobby Portis with 17 points a game. Chris Middleton averaging nearly 25. So to come out in that game, too, and really respond that way, especially after everything that happened, I'm pretty sure Giannis is going to be okay. But, yeah, I can see Milwaukee taking this, right? Like, Milwaukee's not going to have an issue with Miami. Miami's tried their best. Jimmy Butler's averaging 30 in that series. So you're trying to, like, understand where Miami's coming from, but with no Tyler Hero, who just broke his hand, who's probably going to miss the rest of the playoffs, of course. Yeah, it's going to be difficult. It's going to be difficult for the Heat to really convince me that they can have a chance here. Maybe it's Miami. Maybe things happen. Maybe we get another Jimmy Butler game that gets them up 2-1 and puts pressure on Giannis and the other guys to get healthy and see if they can really change the outcome of this matchup, right, this first-round matchup here. Giannis out. We do not know the status for game three here, but I believe he's going to play at some point. Like, I don't think if it was that bad, he would have already been ruled out. That's the first thing. So that's my first thought looking into that Giannis out to the injury. We already know Tyler Hero is going to be out because of the broken hand, making a hustle play, just trying to save the ball, and ended up breaking his hand. So that sucks. But, yeah, I feel like this should be a short series. I feel like Milwaukee, in terms of what they can do defensively and offensively, the versatility that they have there, I just don't know if there's enough versatility there for the Miami Heat to put together another run here. I don't see it as yet. Now we move to the Grizzlies and Lakers. Dylan Brooks has went full heel mode, calling LeBron old and washed and saying that he hasn't scored 40 on him, so he doesn't respect him, all this other stuff, right? To the point where the people have hated the Grizzlies so much that Skip Bayless wants LeBron James to destroy Dylan Brooks. Oh, man. So things have gotten so bad that Skip Bayless wants LeBron James to destroy Dylan Brooks, right? And that's quite possibly what's going to happen. But as we look at this series overall, for the Grizzlies to go out the other night and get another win like that, tough as nails playoff game against the Lakers to do that, get that much scoring, get that much versatility, as I always talk about with these teams here, to get that and win that game like that without Adams, without Ja, without Brandon Clark, to get that type of productivity across the board, especially from Tillman, with 22 and 13 rebounds, really outplaying Anthony Davis, which was the difference in that game majority of the time. To get that type of performance from a guy like that, to look at this team that just refuses to go down, right? Like, they always talk crap. They always talk brash. And no one has turned on the Grizzlies more than the public eye of approval, right? Like, they were the young, fun team that everybody loved. And then all of a sudden this year, it's like, oh, you guys didn't win anything. You guys didn't do anything. And I'm like, they're young. They're going to take their growing pains. They're not going to beat everybody right away. But everybody's like, oh, yeah, they're still kids, though, and they haven't done anything. And I'm like, isn't that what you guys want out of athletes? Isn't that what you want out of your teams and players? You want them to have confidence, even if it's irrational confidence. Having that type of confidence is better than no confidence. So I'm always going to rock with the Grizzlies for that. I love what they do. I love the young team. Ja Morant's an exciting player. There's determination that he is sore, but they're trying to see if he can come back. It's going to be interesting what he's going to be able to do and if he's able to change the trajectory of this, right? Because everyone's sitting there saying, hey, the Grizzlies are dead. They're missing three starters. They're not going to be able to hang. But it's like there's a puncher's chance. There's a reason why he rolled the ball out on the floor, even if it's against the Los Angeles Lakers, who are getting tremendous play from Anthony Davis and LeBron James. And when you look at these other teams here in terms of in terms of their roster, getting production from Reeves, getting production from Rui Hachimura. I believe he's averaging 25 points in this game. Let me see here. Let me just make sure that I'm reading this right, right? I believe he's the leading scorer for the series. Let me just check, because Rui Hachimura has just changed his whole trajectory of his free agency or whatever the case may be. Yes, he's averaging 24.5 points per game, shooting 70% from three, 5.5 rebounds. So you're getting crazy production from Rui Hachimura and Austin Reeves, who's averaging 17.5 points a game and four assists. So you're getting all that production from the Lakers wise. And when LeBron was in that game the other night, it seemed like he had the ball in his hand a little bit too much, unlike game one, right? Like where he was letting Reeves run the show. He was letting Rui Hachimura get his shots and letting those young guys really win that game. And I feel like we need a little bit of that from LeBron to kind of, because Austin Reeves and Rui Hachimura work good together. They have those matchups. They're able to attack and be able to be efficient. So you're like, why would LeBron take over the ball at this point in time? It's how he's played his whole life. Of course, we know that. But in terms of playing off ball and being a bigger threat, even if it's a decoy, to have those guys get confidence and build confidence for the next rounds, as I spoke with the Denver Nuggets versus Minnesota, use these rounds to build up confidence in those guys and get them running. Even though you are LeBron James, I understand it, but let those guys cook so they can do what they need to do. That's the main thing there. But yeah, Dylan Brooks sitting there going at LeBron James, having Skip Bayless actually cheering LeBron James is going to be hilarious, to get that type of reaction and that type of heat, as I should say, heat from the fans and stuff like that. For him to get that type of ovation, to get that type of hatred, to get that much buzz out the media, Dylan Brooks is doing his job. And I believe they said that there was draft picks and OG Anunoby. Grizzlies just needed to add a player. I don't know if they tried to do that, and there could have been a different person there, right? Like, yeah, I just don't – Dylan Brooks just not causing this much ruckus in the media. It's just like, yes, I understand they're talking, but he has to prove it, right? Like, he has to continue to play tough defense and do a little bit better than on LeBron than we see him do. And looking at this Grizzlies matchup, and it's like, if you can just get Ja back, you can get anybody back here and really be able to put it on the Lakers – you put them in a pickle now, because you're now extending the series. And I said that was one of the things that Memphis had to do, was extend the series, extend these conversations, make it gritty, make it work, aggravate people. Maybe not to the point where DeMontis Sabonis grabbing Draymond Green's leg, but that's your best chance. Make it dirty. Fight from within, attack, 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 and that's how they have to beat the Lakers. Just try to make it a track meet. And that was funny, because the Lakers actually played better when they were faster. They're actually one of the faster teams in the league. I believe they're sixth in the league in pace so far this year. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting, as that's a late-night game, primetime game. I feel like LeBron can at least let Reeves and Rui Hachimura get it going, let Anthony Davis get going. Rather than having the high offensive uses that he had in the game two. But we'll see that. We'll see that. Yeah, I just feel like that's something that would be interesting. But yeah, finishing up there with that, I wanted to touch base on something else. Let me just type it in here. I want to talk about the Draymond Green suspension that everyone's losing their minds over. Now, everyone's sitting there saying Sabonis grabbed his leg. Yes, he did. And I thought the normal reaction would have been to just fall over, fall down. But he gets his leg loose, and he stomps Domantas Sabonis. You can say whatever you want. You can say, yeah, he was grabbing his leg, et cetera, et cetera. But when you stomp a guy, that's not normal activity. That's not normal behavior. Of course, not grabbing a guy's leg is normal activity. We've seen it when guys are trying to protect themselves in certain situations or just stop a guy from getting up. We've seen it. But then I think the thing that the league looked at and saw from Draymond Green, his interaction with the fans, and yes, the fans were being hecklers, yelling all types of profanities, sticking up middle fingers, et cetera, et cetera. But he should be suspended. I'm sorry to break it to you. He should be suspended. That's just the way it should go. He should be suspended. It was an excessive act, that's one. And then two, going crazy with the fans. Yeah, you got to sit down, buddy. And everybody's trying to blame everybody else besides Draymond Green. Like, no, this is him. This is what's happening. There's a reason why it's happening. People are saying it's history, whatever. The point is you can't stomp nobody then out like that. You can't. You just can't. That's just not allowed. And I feel like people are trying to make it more than what it is and trying now to make it look like Sabonis is the bad guy or whatever the case may be. He had some part to play in that, of course, as well. But no. 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 I think he should be suspended. That's fine. And everybody's worried about the Golden State Warriors. The Golden State Warriors had every chance to improve this team. They had every chance to trade him. They had every chance to do everything. And they did not. They did not. And when the longer you have Draymond Green on these type of situations, these type of teams, yes, he is immaculate. He is a basketball genius. He's able to play defense as an undersized guy. He's able to pass the ball. He's able to rebound. He's able to score at some certain times. Not always, but at certain times. But these are the risks that you run into keeping a guy like this. And this might be his last year, right? Like, people are whispering that and saying that. But this is crazy to me. Mm-hmm. Because he's so vital to that infrastructure that they're willing to give him a little bit more rope than anybody else. And I understand it from that standpoint, team dynamics, et cetera, et cetera. But when you are this rambunctious, this controversial, the Mavericks can cut, I mean, the Warriors can cut base with you because it's just too much. They can do that. That happens. But yeah, it's just tough, man. It's just tough. But he should be suspended. He should have got suspended for game three, and he was. And the Warriors won that game. So it wasn't even like they needed him to do that. Maybe it opened up their offense a little bit more. But moving on from that, people were saying that Joel Embiid should have been kicked out. In that situation, yes. I thought he should have been kicked out as well. Just the kick alone. He could have let Nick Claxton walk over him, but in this league where you got to put your pride on the line there, you can't do that. I got to do something. And that was the result of that. I thought he should have got suspended. James Harden was a little bit more tough to tell. Nobody was able really to give me a clear-cut answer, but yeah. Yeah, but of course, that will do it for this episode of the Basketball Soapbox, episode 42. If you like what you heard, like, comment, subscribe, and share. As always, we'll keep this thing going. And of course, with more playoff talk, Ring Takes is coming back. Of course, we've been on a little hiatus because WWE has been a little slow, but we're trying to do a GOAT bracket. We're trying to do a GOAT bracket. We're going to narrow all those names down and really get into the nitty gritty of that, and maybe we can extend it a little bit before Backlash and the draft that's going to happen. But that will do it for this episode, and thank you for joining me, and until next time.